Have you ever had to go to court before? Sometimes, even if you haven't done anything wrong, you do end up in court not as a perpetrator, but as the victim of a crime. You might hope nothing bad will happen to you, but like it or not, it is a possibility, and it could happen to any of us, really. And when that happens, you're relying on the police and then the prosecutors to charge and convict the person responsible. Sometimes, even if you're convinced that someone's guilty, the prosecutors, well, they don't agree, and they might drop the case or go with a lesser charge. That can be pretty devastating, and under the current system in Australia, there is no way to appeal that decision. Is there a better way? Dr. Mary Iliadis is a lecturer in criminology at Deakin University. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Damien, for having me.
If you are a victim in the legal system at the moment, how does it work right now? Who do you deal with?
Essentially, if you become a victim of crime and you decide to report that to the police take carriage of the investigation, and then that's passed on to the prosecution if charges are laid. So as a victim of crime, you really are dealing with prosecuting authorities, and you are relying on them to take carriage of both investigating and prosecuting the case. So you really don't have anyone advocating on your behalf specifically, because the police and prosecuting authorities represent the state and their interests more broadly.
So if I'm walking down the street, someone comes up behind me, smacks me in the head, I fall over, I'm in a coma for a few weeks, the police find the person they think did it, they charge them, but things can change after that, can't they? So what do the prosecutors do that's different after that?
Absolutely. Things can change, and there might be decisions to engage in plea negotiations with defence counsel, depending on the nature of the circumstances surrounding the case. But really, it does essentially mean that the victim is not really taking carriage of those proceedings. So they are essentially a prosecution witness to the case, which means in some ways they do have quite a marginalised role, in the sense they don't really have a voice throughout that process. And it also means that if their interests or needs conflict with prosecuting authorities, they really don't have a mechanism to challenge their decision-making processes.
So it sounds harsh, but I mean, prosecutors are using public money, aren't they? So they have to make decisions sometimes based on what they think they can prove in court.
Absolutely. It comes down to how strong the evidence is within the case, and you need to be able to prove a case beyond reasonable doubt within a criminal court. But also, we have to be thinking about the way in which our legal system works, which is based on adversarial exchange between the state and the accused, and the state being the prosecution, who represent the public interest more broadly. Victim witnesses and victim survivors definitely come into that, but they do fall. They are constituted within the state more broadly.
So, for example, I've spoken to victims of child sexual abuse who, you know, many decades after the crime, someone's been charged, and then they find later on that the prosecution says, well, actually, we're going to drop four of the charges and we've done a deal on the other one, and they feel completely shut out of the process. Why does that happen?
That is a really good question, Damien. And within the context of child sexual abuse cases, the research consistently tells us that it takes years on end for victim survivors to report the abuse, and in some instances, victims never come forward to report. So the reporting rates are actually a gross underestimate of the gravity, nature and impacts of sexual violence against people as children, but also in their adult lives. So when a victim survivor does discover that charges might be withdrawn or perhaps discontinued, usually that is because there is insufficient evidence or perhaps a lack of evidence to present when prosecuting the case. And that can be a really difficult thing for a victim survivor to understand, understandably so as well, because it is such a traumatic crime, and it does take a lot of courage for victims to come forward and put in that initial complaint.
Dr. Mary Iliadis is our guest on ABC Radio Perth and WA. She's a lecturer in criminology at Deakin University. So at the moment, if the prosecution makes a decision that the victim survivor doesn't like, there's
nowhere for them to turn. There's no right of appeal.
That's right, Damien. So there's currently no right of appeal for victims, which makes it extremely challenging. If a victim is told that their case is being discontinued and charges will not proceed, they are not able to contest prosecutorial decisions, which means they essentially have no other avenue or recourse to justice. This is, of course, quite problematic in many ways, because many times we've had coronial inquests recommending that charges be reinstated, and the DPP have on occasion ignored these recommendations, which makes it really difficult for victims to then feel like they've attained some sort of justice through our legal system.
So they might feel like that sort of process is hidden to them, the decision is relayed to them, but there's no way for them to understand why it was made sometimes, or to make the prosecution change their minds.
That's right. So once the prosecution have made their mind, they might communicate that with the victim. In fact, victims' charters and codes of charters require prosecuting authorities to communicate information to victims, and usually this is done quite well. But there have been instances where victims have expressed that they haven't received the information they need or the amount of information required to fully understand the reasons behind those decision-making processes. And this is quite different to the case in England and Wales, where victims now have a right to request a review of the decisions made by prosecutors in their case.
So how does that work, that process?
Essentially, in England and Wales, if a victim becomes a victim of crime, then they are able to contest or challenge prosecutor decisions not to proceed with charges. So if a victim reports an offence to police and a decision is made to withdraw or discontinue those charges in the magistrate's court, a victim can write to the DPP, and which is equivalent to their Crown Prosecution Service, and ask for a request and ask for a review of that decision. And that essentially means that a second prosecuting authority will review the evidence and public interest. And in some cases, that initial decision made by the first prosecuting authority can be overturned. And we've seen many instances in which these cases have actually resulted in conviction, particularly in child sexual abuse cases.
Yeah. So what does the overseas experience tell us? Would it be set up differently here or the same?
The overseas experience definitely sets a roadmap for reform, and I would strongly urge Australian states and territories to look to England and Wales to see what's happening in terms of the victim's right to review and to learn from how it's operating and how it might be advancing victims' justice experiences. However, what the research does tell us, particularly the research that I've conducted with Associate Professor Asha Flynn from Monash University, is that victims don't often know about their right to review. So this comes down to prosecuting authorities' obligation to keep victims informed. What we also know is that the reviews are conducted within the Crown Prosecution Service in England and Wales. And sometimes there is a perception that they might not contest or challenge the decision-making processes of the very people in the organisation with whom they work. So this brings us to another potential implication within Australian states and territories, in that if we were to consider introducing a victim's right to review scheme, there would be stronger merit in having an external system of review, so that more transparency and accountability can be underlying those decision-making processes, and we can really start to unpick gaps in decision-making and perhaps identify any areas that might require improvement, so we can really be delivering justice to victims.
I'm assuming, though, that you couldn't allow endless appeals in England. I mean, is there a limit to the amount of time, or, you know, the number of times you can appeal a prosecution decision?
So victims have up to 3 months to contact the Crown Prosecution Service in England and Wales to request a review of the decision made, and prosecuting authorities will then take on that second review. If the victim is still not satisfied with that second review and a letter of explanation is provided to the victim, then that case can actually be referred to the Appeals and Review Unit, which is located at the London headquarters. So a second review will actually take place. Although theoretically it is accessible to all victims of crime, there are a large number of victims who don't know about this review process. So what the evidence tells us, and on some of the research that I've recently led, is that between the 2013 period and the 2017 period, 449,000 cases were eligible for review, of which only about 6,000 victims requested a review. So that accounts for approximately 1.5% of all qualifying decisions. And of those, we only saw 0.17% being overturned. So it's a very, very small percentage.
And could you appeal literally any decision? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, at the level of if someone pinches 10 bucks from my wallet and I don't like that, you know, does that sit at just the police level, or are we only talking about serious crimes here?
All victims of crime are eligible to request a review of decisions, but there are certain eligibility criteria. So the victim must adhere to one of four eligibility criteria, and one of those includes the decision to not lay charges or to discontinue or withdraw charges.
Such a fascinating idea. We'll have to see if it comes about in Australia. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us about it.
Pleasure, Damien. Thank you.
And Dr. Mary Iliadis, lecturer in criminology at Deakin University.